I have
current geek.
Current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all the things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt.
Well, when I hit the gavel this time, yeah. Sawyer was down here and he ran out of the room.
Oh,
like,
no.
I didn't do it.
Judgment.
Don't judge me.
Judgment has come.
I am so glad to be back. We've had two long weeks without Current Geek, Scott.
That's right. To quote the famous film, what is it? What's the one where you got to get your ass to Mars?
It's that movie.
That
with
movie.
The guy.
With Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's dressed up as the lady. Total Recall, and she goes, how long are you going to be here? She goes, 2 weeks. Where's your baggage? 2 weeks. I'm sorry? 2 weeks. And then she falls apart. That's what that reminds me of every time anyone says 2 weeks.
Well, let's get our guests to Current Geek.
Yeah, they were with us at Nerdtacular, which is why we didn't have a show last week, and now they're here with us today. Let's start with Revision 3's own Roger Chang. Hello, Roger.
Hello. Not with Revision 3 anymore.
I thought you were.
No.
Oh, well, that's...
I'm a free agent at this point of my life.
Oh, wow. That's great, though. That's cool. Big plans? Got cool stuff going? What's happening? Good?
I got stuff going. I wouldn't necessarily call them cool.
All right. Well, cool. Well, I was... it was really cool having you at Nerdtacular. That I know.
Oh, it was great to be there. It was fun.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Also with us, another Roger, but we're going to refer to him on this program as Ralph, because that is his sort of online persona. It's what he does in video games. I met him in World of Warcraft. Now he helps run the largest World of Warcraft guild in the world. It's Roger White, everybody. Hi, Roger.
Hey.
Or Ralph.
How you doing, Scott?
I guess it's Ralph now.
Ralph. It'll be easier.
It'll be totally easy.
With so many Rogers.
Yeah.
If you hear cloth rubbing sounds, yell at Roger Chang.
Chang, yeah. Not White.
You still hear it? Do you hear it?
Yeah, I was hearing it there for a second.
Occasionally, but it's, you know.
All right, I won't move.
Now that we've called attention to it.
I think you should just wrap it around your nose.
Yeah. That seems appropriate. It's super cool to have you both. Two very smart guys, as far as I'm concerned, which means we're going to have lots of likely smart conversations. And then Tom and I will bring up the rear, right, Tom? That's what we'll do here.
That's how I do it on East Meets West.
That's right, of course. Let's get straight into it then. Here you go.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Why, it's the top of the show, and Tom's got the reins.
Malforian, not Malfurion. Mm. No storm rage involved.
Okay. All right.
Malforian sent us this one on our subreddit. Oh, did I mention we have a subreddit? Currentgeek.reddit.com. It was extraordinarily helpful this week in preparing the show. So thank you, everybody who submitted stuff. Get in there and submit. Subscribe. Do all that stuff. Malforian sent us this one. The app Yo, which allows people to send each other a message of exactly two letters, as long as those letters are Y followed by O, now has a deadly serious use. Red Alert Israel is using it to send a yo anytime there's an attack. And there's been a lot of those.
That's insane. Like, why this app and not something else? I can't think of anything else, but why this app specifically? Do you think it's just
Red Alert Israel has their own app, but it's only for Android and it's more complex. And they realized, well, if people know that the yo is coming from our account, they'll know what it means. Mm. And it's a way for us to cover a lot more people with a very simple message.
And is this... Yeah. Roger Chang, do you think, I don't know. This just seems odd. The idea that, I feel like it kind of works as code, you know, but obviously that's not what this app was intended for. What do you think of this?
That's kind of odd. I mean, Red Alert already has its own app. And so I guess the premise is that you can use Yo to give the initial warning. And then if anyone needs additional information, they can go straight to the standalone app. So I guess it gives you a tiered response. So you can see it says, yo, mama, or your mother. you can say, oh, I can ignore it for a couple of hours because I'm watching a movie. But if it says, like, you know, yo, red alert, oh, I better check this out because there might be a mortar or a rocket, you know, headed for my general vicinity.
Yeah. And who do you suppose is not down with this, Roger White? Like, who do you think is not happy that yo is being used this way?
Maybe it hits their servers, but when I think of this, I think of back in the day, people used to use pagers in a similar way, right? I mean, you could use, it's just, you're supposed to just send a phone number for a callback. That's supposed to be the usage, but people would send 911 They'd send whatever number.
Yeah.
And people would even do this trick where you would do a collect call to someone. And then when they asked for your name, you would say some goofy name and the person, that would be your message, right? So people have always had this technique of using things for their not desired purpose.
Yeah. Like a like a dog bowl in BSG,
simple
right?
Simple messages.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to have that happen when I was DJ at WGEL in like 1987. This guy would call
name dropper.
From a penitentiary, right? Oh, I'm such a name dropper.
Yeah.
This guy would call from a penitentiary, and I would pick up the phone and say WGEL, and they'd say, this is a collect call from the Joker, Aerosmith, Dream On. Will you accept the charges? And I would say no, and then I would know he was requesting a song.
Wow. You are a name dropper.
Yes, you are. It's like, oh, I dealt with hardened criminals. I spun.
I can't believe that the effect of that story was to have you all accuse me of name dropping an anonymous penitentiary resident.
How do we know it's anonymous? Are you guys hooked up later?
That was
Tom,
the start,
you made
start
my
of your rapid
rise.
Yeah,
I was just trying to share an example.
That's all
right. But these guys, I think they're just trying to get into more hands, you know, quick and easy, and it's anonymous. You know, if you have Red Alert on your phone, people know what you're doing. If you have Yo, it could be anything.
Yeah, it could be anything. I like it.
The Yo, it's all about who sent it that sets the context, right? And I think we always laugh at these things. People laughed at Twitter, the 140 characters. Why would you ever want to do that? It's just going to tell me you're eating a sandwich? Like, yes, actually, and that's going to be very popular. Yeah. With Yo, we're starting to like, oh, the World Cup thing where it would send you a Yo when it was a goal was sort of interesting. This is actually useful.
Yeah, I think it's all right.
I just finished a book, The Martian, and there's a section in that where he is just getting back communications with Earth, and I'm probably spoiling all kinds of things
No, no, no. I don't think so at all. Having just finished the book myself, I don't
it's
think
it's right after he dies.
Right. Yeah. And he's a ghost. It's a ghost of Mars.
Sure.
It's a ghost. It's great.
But it goes to show
how
just a small amount of information combined with context and timing is very useful.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Well, hopefully it's better than a guy in a red cape swooping overhead like our next story.
K. Bouton 1 gets credit for this posting. One-time Superman Brandon Routh, and when I say one time, I don't mean he used to be. I mean he only got to do it one time. Yep. He is going to join the DC Universe again, though, on CW's The Arrow next season as the Ray Palmer version of the Atom. Spoiler, Ray Palmer is the Atom.
Oh, well, very nice. How do we feel about... I mean, that's cool, whatever. This stuff sort of stunt casting to me, but how's everybody in the room feel about Arrow at this point? Roger, you a fan?
I hated the first season Arrow. It was just the total, like, snooze. It totally didn't... I didn't care whether it lived or died. Second season really picked up and I really got engaged. Third season kind of was, like, in its stride. So I will say...
It's only had two seasons, Roger.
When it goes into its third season, it'll hit its stride. All right?
We knew what you meant.
It will be awesome.
Yeah.
Better be awesome. But you know what? They did the Barry Allen thing with the Flash as a way to promo the upcoming Flash series.
Right, spinoff, right?
So as long as you know, and the thing is, Brandon really isn't. I mean, he was great in the with the Scott Pilgrim.
Great
that movie.
I forgot he was in that. Yeah, he was great in that.
So
I forgot, but yeah, he was great.
So if he can get some really solid writing and he doesn't, you know, he can sort of act in this, it might be good. I don't know. I mean, one of the issues I had with Smallville was it's like we want to do the DC universe without the costumes. And then they did the whole thing where it's like, oh, we're just going to get a little mini Justice League together and all this other stuff. And it just kind of got weird. I think if they stay true to kind of how they've written Arrow up to this point, or at least kind of staged it, it should be all right. I'll give Ruth the benefit of the doubt, but you know,
I think he's fine. In fact,
Ruth?
I don't know. He's a tall guy.
That's who knows? It's a baby Ralph, Brian. Tom, when you buy a candy bar, baby Ralph is what you're looking for.
I hate when I see one of those floating in the pool.
Maybe it's Brandon Ralph. So Ralph, where are you at? I know you kind of were up and down on Shield for a while there, and now you're kind of cool with it. How do you feel about Arrow, and how do you feel about him being in it?
So I think I stopped after three Arrows and I haven't watched any more. But I've heard all the talk that it ramped back up and I'm willing to believe it. But also, I don't know hardly any DC stuff. I'm all Marvel.
Yeah. Mm.
So I have no idea what the Atom is, what he does.
For shame.
I know it's a.
It's like picking Ford over
okay
Chevy.
F with my feeling bad about it. It's kind of where I am.
Yeah. I mean, I used to be a lot bigger on DC than I don't know. I'm way kind of into Marvel now, but I mean, DC still holds a little spot in my heart. And I feel like when they do DC right, it can be really strong and really great. And I'll agree with Roger. Second season of Arrow got hella better than the first season was just more pretty people on the WB pretending to be superheroes. And I was kind of done with that.
Okay, so that went away?
That went away.
Had the same, a little bit of the same effect.
Yeah.
I mean, totally. Not the Shield. Agents of Shield.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually liked the first season of Arrow, but it took me a while to get into it. And the only thing that kept me into it was the backstory on the island. And by the end of season one, I realized, okay, they're actually moving away from the pretty people in the ballroom. And it totally is gone in season two, for the most part.
Well, good. No more pretty people.
I say totally, but yeah. Mostly gone.
I mean, they're still pretty. It's just they don't act like it.
They're not in the ballroom, mostly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Well, I have time over the summer with no new shows on. I'll probably pick it up.
So here we all are sitting around doing a podcast. And it's kind of cool because we get to talk about stuff we want to. And we don't have to necessarily sit completely still. But Tom, what if I had to sit in a room for 15 minutes and not move?
You would give yourself an electrical shock.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Stalwart
submitter Mike P. Kennedy gave us this one. Researchers at the University of Virginia asked study participants to sit in an empty room for somewhere between 6 to 15 minutes and think. They all said it was hard. Don't laugh until you've done it. Oops. Then, though, the researchers decided to spice things up by adding a 9-volt battery-powered device that would allow participants to give themselves a small shock. 6 out of the 24 women did it, and 12 out of the 18 men did it, and most of the people who decided to shock themselves did so 7 times. So once you started, you couldn't stop. It was like chips.
What the heck? Why would you...
You know what? It just could be the lack of sensation. They wanted something to.
I just wanted to feel something.
Yeah, totally. It's just it's a 9-volt version of cutting yourself.
I knew someone was going to mention that. This story is very disturbing.
Yeah.
Or people are really into kind of masochism.
Maybe.
It's only a 9-volt. I mean, it doesn't feel very well, right. But it's only a 9-volt battery. If you've ever licked a 9-volt battery, which I'm not admitting that I have, but it shocks you, but it's not horrible.
No.
It's not like excruciating pain.
Sure. Really. And you do it as a kid because you're just screwing off and you're like, you know, I'm gonna try this once, see what happens. My buddy dared me
to
do it.
You do it to test to see if the battery's still good. You ever get it?
Right?
You put it underneath your tongue.
Ooh, underneath.
Yeah, and then you get your little brother to do it.
I made my son do it once because I said, you need to have this at least once.
You gotta be careful or it'll dissolve.
Yeah, don't keep it under sublingual battery testing.
What
The weirdest line from the story is the researchers hypothesize this might have to do with the fact that men appear to be more willing to take risks for the sake of an intense and complex experience than women.
Oh, wow.
Maybe. I think it's just
that seems they're really reaching there.
Yeah.
I think it's just because men are just more testosterone-y. Kind of like, you know, oh, no pain, no gain.
That's tautological, though, Roger. You're saying men are men.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'm a
men are men. That's why they do that.
That's my favorite special at Olive Garden, by the way.
Boys,
I like a big plate of testosterone once in a
while. Oh, yeah. I got some of that at the Italian restaurant.
Especially with the meatballs on the side.
Yeah.
The big ones.
Just two, though. Just two.
Would you like some Parmesan on your test?
Unless you're Lance Armstrong, then you only need one.
But it's not a risk. You know when you do it. It's not a risk. You're going to get... I'm going right over that.
Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you. Ralph did the right thing there. Yeah.
You know you're going to get shocked. So it's not a risk. It's not like you're somehow being brave. You're just, this thing I'm going to do. It's a,
It's like fiddling with something. Like they put you in a room with nothing else. You're like, yeah, okay, I'll use this device.
You know what? Bet you for guys, they're probably thinking to themselves, like, how man am I? That, like, how much can I withstand before I can't do it anymore?
It's a freaking 9-volt battery. That is not what they were
thinking. I don't know.
They were just bored.
Maybe. Well, I'm trying to understand part of the study that sticks out to me that they're not really talking about much here. Maybe there's more to it, but is 15 minutes is seeming like a long time to people now? Is that where we've gotten to?
I'd be careful with that until you've actually sat there with 15 minutes, because it's easy to jump to the, like, these days, the kids with their Sesame Street and their MTV don't have, but I think 15 minutes when you have no stimulus, right? There's not a bookshelf. There's not a poster to look at. There's nothing. Think about yourself in a waiting room where there isn't much going on and you don't have your phone.
Like a boring dental office.
For anybody.
Sure.
Yeah.
At least there you had your Highlights magazine and your whatever. I guess you're right.
I wonder if there was a clock in there. If you have a clock and you can kind of judge how much time you have left.
Yeah, I don't think there was any clock in there. There was nothing as far as what I read.
Weird. Well,
there was one guy that used the device 190 times and they decided he was an outlier.
He's not joking. That was true. Yeah.
They said, we're just not going to use his data.
He was trying to use it to keep track of the time. Like just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Weird. Yeah. And you couldn't take your phone or any. I mean, you were in there virtually. I mean, you had your clothes on, I guess, but that's it.
Ooh, I would have read the tag on my clothes.
Okay. I'm going to admit to something. When I read studies like this, I feel like I'm in a position as a dad where I could actually like do this once in a while.
Do science.
Yeah, like take a kid and say, all right, Nick, sit in this room. It's dark. You can't do anything for 10 minutes. Put a couple of cameras on them and see how this all goes.
And if you mess them up too much, you can just have another one.
Yeah, why not? Right. There's always more. It's fine. Yeah.
That was actually a fair point about this study is it's not been replicated yet. Yeah. And it certainly wasn't a statistically significant sample because they only had like 42 people in here, I think, that actually did the shock part of it. They had more that did the just sit in the room part. But you need some more work to be done.
All right.
It seems like a story designed to get an article written about it.
Probably. Yeah.
No, I don't think so. We always want to jump to that conclusion, but research scientists rarely do that. And I'm not saying it never happens, but it's very rare. They are pursuing a line of research here about how the human
grant
works.
Money.
No, and I think this is I think this is worthwhile.
So this study is more about boredom than electric shocks.
Yeah. What happens with these studies, I feel like, is we see the one study that's part of a longer research program. It's like we need to find out this, then we find out this, then we see what this happens. And out of context, they seem silly. Because we don't know where they're going with the research. But yeah, if they're like, okay, we need to find out what the limits of boredom and human stimulation are in pursuit of the ability to make people able to travel to Mars in a very small compartment, perhaps, or something like that, this would make perfect sense.
It's also very low risk, right? Like they just have to sit in the room and they just have to maybe mess with the battery that isn't going to harm them.
And they just have to deliver themselves electric shocks.
Right. But it, you know, on the whole, it's not like we're just like permanently damaging the psyche of these people. At least I don't think so. This is always slippery slope stuff, but... it's interesting nonetheless. Nice article. I like it.
S. Snapier sent this next one in. David Braben is developing a sequel to Elite, which he worked on as a young man, called Elite Dangerous, and is using actual astronomical data to create the star fields. Intriguingly, he's been using procedural physics models to fill in gaps in that information. And Braben says his model has predicted real-life discoveries, including a couple of extrasolar planets.
So for those not in the know, Elite is really old, isn't it?
It's like
very old. 80s. It came from mid-80s.
Yeah, we're talking like Apple IIe is where maybe I saw this, or maybe a Commodore 64 or something.
It was super old. It was super. I think C64, Atari ST, Amiga. Mm. They had it out for the PC. I almost bought it, but I didn't.
Mm.
And the premise is basically, I think you fly around in kind of like a space simulator and you're supposed to meet and make contact with aliens and discover new worlds as part of your mission. At that time, there was a lot of similar games, I think.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds like that new, what is it? No Man's Sky coming out? In a very real way. Yeah. I mean, I remember those kinds of games and they were kind of these freeform open things where you'd go to a planet. The ones I remember playing, and I even tried to make one, was a lot of starfield simulation while you were flying, like warp speed. And then when you'd land, it was all like Zork text-based stuff, like go forward, go left, go north, pick up this rock, whatever. And I used to be just enamored with that stuff. And I feel like in a real way, at least spiritually speaking, I think No Man's Sky is trying to maybe not reproduce that, but maybe kind of we're in a place now where we can literally do that, and it's all randomized and all procedurally generated, and that's super exciting to me. So experiments like this in my mind only lead to better, cool games down the road, even if this seems a little experimental and a little weird. This is all good stuff.
I mean, it's interesting because there were a lot of games in the 80s that tried to kind of mix it up. Instead of giving you a preset field, it would try to randomize them. Starfleet was one that was kind of a Star Trek cross trading discovery game. You had to find new planets, alien civilizations. But there was one called it was a text game called Manhattan, or was it New York? Basically, you were stuck in Manhattan and you had to solve this mystery. But the game would always rewrite where the clues were, who the different people you had to interact with, and one of the things you needed with the to play the game was a blank floppy. Because it would have to basically regenerate everything and write it to a new floppy for you to experience that kind of, you know, variable world.
Wow.
So the old Elite, it had physics simulation and gravity, and you would fly around, and if you got too close to a star, would it, like, you know, pull you in? Or
I think you just getting too much. If I remember, I think you just overheated and blew up.
Well, sure. Why not?
That didn't quite happen. Well, I mean, it's like, you know, before gravity gets you, the heat's going to get you.
Yeah. So this new one, they're saying they used actual data, actual stars from the visible sky, and then they filled in procedurally with the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. They actually used all of the data they could get their hands on that's publicly available of maps that have been made of astronomical data. But there are still gaps, right? There's still parts. And two things they found. One was the extrasolar planets I mentioned. The other was they realized that we are in a big part of a dust cloud because in their simulations, when they pulled out of that dust cloud, the sky got a much brighter. And scientists have often theorized why it is that the Milky Way appears dim, even in places where there isn't light pollution.
Well, here we go. Video games and porn still pushing the technological envelope in 2014.
Finally, commenter Patrick Scalisi at IO9 has cataloged every song that makes an appearance in Stephen King's Dark Tower series. He only included pop songs, only those referred to by lyrics, not just by name, and only those in the proper saga, none of the extended things like The Stand.
Oh, wow. So this is a weird thing, isn't it? Like, why would you... I'm trying to think what would spawn this. I guess just your love of that series.
I think he was stuck in a room. And then he could either shock himself.
He didn't have a battery, so what are you going to do?
He wrote it on his skin in blood.
Well, whatever. I mean, this is what we do now. We don't ever, there's no new ideas under the sun. And once in a while, I'll have some, like, what I think is some brilliant idea for a comic or for something for a show or whatever. And then I'm afraid to go search Google for it because I just know somebody else has done it. And sure enough, 10 people have. Like, I remember way back, this is early on in the Walking Dead TV series time. And I was just playing around with wordplay in my head. And in my head popped The Walking Dead, like Christopher Walken.
Sure.
And I thought, nobody's done that. T-shirt time. We're going to make it. We're going to sell it. It's going to be amazing. I did a search, and there were 1 billion of them already.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is how we get unique things now, is somebody who sits around and goes, all right, what's the least likely thing to exist? I know. A bunch of songs based on Dark Tower books, you know? Because how else are you going to be unique?
Yeah. Well, Stephen King, he definitely is a big fan of music, and you get the sense that it inspires his writing.
Yeah.
And...
Aren't like AC/DC and what was this based on? The movie we just saw, Nurtacular.
Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, you think that was? I was assuming that was the other way around, but probably not.
Every time
Stephen King owns a radio station too.
He does,
according to this posting from Patrick Scalisi.
Oh, nice. All right.
Does he ever appear on it? Like, oh, I'm Stephen King.
Yeah.
Here's what I like. I don't care what you like.
No, I have to say, when I was reading through the, like, even the extended stuff, like The Stand and It, I was definitely putting things on my playlist as I ran across them. Especially around the Low Men in Yellow Coats parts of the story.
Yeah.
I read Joyland recently, and every chapter starts with a little quote from a song. Well, so that's one of Stephen King's more recent books.
Yeah.
So he's still doing it.
Well, good. Still kicking it there, Stephen King. We're going to take a moment here just to tell you that if you want to support this show, and I know you want to, there are still Current Geek pint glasses available now on the store, frogpants.com/store. It's also linked at currentgeek.com. Go there and check them out. There is one side of it says Current Geek, and it has our big logo on there. On the other side, it's Chewbacca riding a elementary school. I don't even know what you call them. What are they called? The little yellow the things.
Little-
hobby thing, horse thing, rides. Whatever yeah. that is. It's really weird and it's totally geeky and you guys should go check it out.
And you know what, Scott?
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I use mine as a water glass.
Yeah.
So if people buy this and then they're drinking something, it would be like having a drink with us.
That's right. I drank 16 ounces of kefir out of mine this morning and nothing to do with Kiefer Sutherland. I can promise you that, but it did have to do with this weird yogurt drink my wife's making me drink and it was fantastic.
You should put that in some club soda.
I should and do it in less than 24 hours, but drink it, have it. And even if it just looks cool on a table,
where do use I it for get that. It?
You go to frogpants.com/store, Tom. It's just right there. It's real simple, real easy. We got some other cool stuff coming up soon for our next few episodes as well. But head on over, check it out. You'll be glad you did.
In case you missed a look at one of the best dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
I have. It's our main stuff, we like to call it. A few stories that stand out for the week. And this one's very tech related. LG showed off an 18-inch flexible screen that can be rolled up into a 3-centimeter tube, and they're promising a 60-inch version. Is this the moment we finally get? What was the movie that did this really well? It was a Vin Diesel movie, and they had a lot of screens that folded up and went in their pockets. Don't remember. Oh,
Triple X?
No.
It wasn't one of the. Pitch Black.
No, I don't think it was one of the Pitch Black movies, the Riddick movies. It was something else, and I don't remember, but I remember at the time going, that is super rad. Just unroll that thing. It works like any kind of display. You fold it back up. I may be thinking of the wrong movie. Or maybe it was Looper. I don't remember. Something like that. But I love this idea. Let me roll it up and put it away. Let's quit having a big chunk of furniture in my house. So
you know what would be great is, you know, you can move past just rolling it away and sticking it. You can actually put it on an article of clothing, like the sleeve of your jacket or whatever, and you can just kind of like, you know, unvelcro it when you need it, and you just velcro it back on.
Yeah.
Babylon AD?
Yeah.
Or like what they do with Continuum, where it's just kind of like in the fabric.
Continuum. That's a show I didn't watch.
I meant to.
And Ralph, you found this old concept art video on YouTube where I felt like it was the best explanation of what you could do with this.
Yeah, it's basically you roll it up in a tube. The outside of the tube has sort of a hard structure of things that are broken into segments, and then the inside of the tube is the guts of the computer. So it has the power and the USB and the Wi-Fi antenna. And so you carry it around, and it basically, you know, it's smaller than a little lunchbox. It's about 3 inches around and about a foot long. And then you unroll it, and the bottom half can be a keyboard. The top half can be a screen, or you can roll it out flat, and it's like a big, art pad.
Like a tablet.
Yeah, like a tablet. And then you can flip it up, they show, and it can be a TV screen. And it's all based on the idea that the front part of it is this flexible screen.
Yeah, my idea of awesome would be taking that thing, laying it out, and being able to draw on it in a portable way, and having it store everything I'm drawing, and have it just feel like paper and quick gestures to kind of go to the next page. I mean that kind of future is very, very intriguing to me as somebody who draws all the time.
I like this image of a guy just walking up and like pulling a scroll out of his pocket and then opening it up and looking at it like a map, and then and then rolling it back up, putting it back in his pocket, and he keeps walking.
So if
we could go back to scrolls instead of like books.
Yeah,
you just because you don't need, you only need a certain length, and you can just kind of scroll or wipe, the text continually down. So that'd actually be great. You don't have pages you got to fiddle with or anything like that.
So here's the thing, though: we're not anywhere near where you can just squish this stuff accidentally or pinch it in your car or. The dog peed on it and you just have to rinse it off or whatever. I feel like that's a ways off, but that's when things really get interesting, when these things can be durable goods to the point that you're not constantly worried about folding it, bending it, pinching it, tearing it. If they can get to that point where they're just durable, like a burlap towel or something. Just
I like when they're durable and they're cheap, and then we can use them for wallpaper.
See?
Yeah,
that's cool.
Or window, like window overlays.
Yeah.
Like on your windshield, it'd be great. You could put like a sat nav. It'd be just like a built-in HUD.
Yeah.
Show me Bali.
Show me.
But I'm on 101.
We were talking about this on Tomorrow Daily. I was filling in for Rich DeMuro with Ashley Esqueda, and I was saying I also want it to be in my laptop so I can just like pull the screen out. and not have this flap.
Oh, I see what you mean. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have to be a thing that would never, that you could roll up that would, but wouldn't try to retain its rolled up state.
Right. Like it'd have to stiffen when you pull.
Immediately, like just immediately lay out. Like, I feel like there's just so many factors in this. There's the electronics and the craziness of actually getting something to display, but there's also just straight up, what are these materials? What future is there where we can mine these materials from our planet somehow still and have better synthetics that will do what this thing needs to do? I think that that'll be a pretty rad future indeed. It's the future of tomorrow today.
Harvested from cells from people, stem cells from people.
Tom, tell me. Yeah, that's how we do it. Tom, tell me about these articles on video footage overturning or exonerating police.
Well, this was actually from Ralph. He put these Ars Technica articles in here, and they're a cool two-part series. One part talks about what you would expect. Like, we've put these video monitors out for law enforcement now. We've forced them to carry them. And yep, we found police doing bad things. And they've got some examples of that. But the other one I thought was even more interesting, Ralph, which was them catching people trying to accuse the police of brutality, but the video exonerates the police and says, no, actually, they were not kicking him. They were trying to, you know, actually put the cuffs on him, or this person did point the gun at him, and we can see it clearly in the video.
So, Ralph, you found an upside to Big Brother kind of here, didn't you?
Well, it's actually not Big Brother, right? Because these videos are coming from all kinds of places. In the first article, some of them came from, like, one of them came from a nearby airport that just had its regular security footage going on that happened to film a traffic accident where a policeman claimed that one thing happened and the actual person driving it was knocked unconscious and so couldn't really counter what the policeman was saying. And then they saw the videotape and saw that the policeman was lying. But the idea is that these cameras are becoming more and more ubiquitous. You know, we all know about Russian dash cams and all the fun videos that come from there. Well, they actually use those for a reason. They use it because people there are very, I guess they have to be reactionary because there's a lot of people that will claim to get hit by a car and then sue you.
And those videos have shown those people who will, you know, the guy is stopped and someone will still run out in the street and hurl themselves at the hood and then act like they were harmed in the process. Yeah.
Dash cams are sort of a reaction to that, but a side effect of it is, you know, now we get all these fun videos. Well, in America, we're not getting all the fun videos yet, but we are getting this side effect of people being able to actually have video to show what really happened instead of just having to rely on, you know, he said, she said.
Which
is always, you know, the policeman has a bias, has a reason to, you know, to lie to get the, you know, because this is his collar or whatever. And the people also have a reason to lie. But it's going to grow even more, I think, into not just the policeman or the citizen having it, but, you know, eight other citizens who happen to be standing around having it.
Hmm. And there was one town in there where they noticed a reduction in both complaints about police brutality and actual resisting arrest once people started to know that the cameras were pervasive.
Yeah, it's there's been some knee-jerk response in policemen across the country, you know, not wanting to do this and just, I guess, coming to grips with this new technology and how it affects their work. But I think it's got to be only better if they know when they're out there performing their job, it's being filmed. And like you said, if citizens know it's being filmed too, they can't try to, you know, claim that things were unfairly done. Just keeping everybody sort of on the truth.
Right.
At least until our technology gets to where we can easily, you know, alter all the videos.
Well, it makes sense that people would be interested in watching what the police are doing because people pay their paychecks. I mean, it comes from taxpayers. So to me, that relationship of observation kind of works. When you start getting into, all right, I work for some company or there are 200 employees in this building and we don't know it, but we're all being filmed all the time. And that happens. Some companies do that, obviously.
Right.
But that's a much more adversarial reaction, isn't it, than it is, say, you know, us saying, well, we're taxpayers, damn it, these policemen should be out there doing what we say they should be doing. We want to see every move they make. I don't know why it sounds so much sour to say, you know, I work at, Netflix and they're looking at me all the time.
Yeah. And being an officer isn't necessarily the funnest job either. I mean, you have to deal with a wide, you know, spectrum of issues. And, you know, quite frankly, I think I don't think there's a lot of training in some of the less non-traditional aspects. I mean, one of the things a lot of officers are often accused of is using excessive force. But it's one of the things that, you know, they kind of teach you is, you know, to ensure that their safety, you want to make sure that the assailant or whatever can't do anything that would otherwise hurt you or a bystander. So you do kind of go that extra notch. And so I think, you know, it's good and it's bad. And it's one of those things that society will have to adapt to. I mean, the same way that, you know, people had to get, you know, thousands of years ago, had to get used to being in a group of people that numbered in the thousands, always kind of looking at you, you know, doing stuff that you couldn't get away with things. Now you're taking the next step where it's not just people, but objects that actually have very good memory and great recall, and they can show everyone else what you were doing that night on Friday, you know, the 24th,
yeah,
you know, at that bar. And so it's I wouldn't say it's good or bad. It's just, I think, the next evolution of how society works.
Yeah.
I think this is really a lot easier of a test case for it in this realm, because there aren't really people thinking that policemen out doing their job, you know, need to have a right to privacy, right? In a lot of other places where people are being filmed and, you know, people worried about Google Glass, if you're walking out on the street, you know, just with your wife and family, you know, do you have a right to not have people film you? There's people have questions about that. But a policeman in the course of doing his job, I think most of us agree that that is something that should be able to be filmed, because it makes sense to use it later in court and just to make sure everybody's adhering, you know, to the rules, both on the police and the citizen side.
Yeah.
I think if I were a law enforcement officer, I would have a legitimate concern that what is going to show up on that video is going to be misunderstood or misconstrued in the court of public opinion. I'm less worried about internal investigation, although a little bit. I'm more worried about it's going to look like I'm doing something that I'm not. But I do hope, my hope and my belief is that over time, we become literate in how to read these sorts of things, and people start to understand, oh, yes, a policeman does have to be forceful, and they do have to, you know, keep the legs apart to stop an assailant from kicking them or whatever, and that was fair in what I saw there.
Yeah. But, and the police have their own recording devices that they can also use to show their point of view on it, to, you know, to help, you know, balance the conversation. Yeah,
the original dash cams, those guys have.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let me ask everyone a quick question. Do you think this in time will erode kind of a trust factor? Like, oh, I don't have a camera on me, so wait, let me get that before we do anything, because I don't really trust you, you know, saying, you know, like, not just outside of law enforcement, but in general, like public.
Like you and I meet for the first time at a restaurant, and we're going to talk about some business arrangement. And I'm like, I need to film this because I don't know you.
I don't think it would be any different than the pervasiveness of audio recording in that respect. I think, yeah, some people won't trust each other and they'll want to do a video recording, et cetera. But I don't think it erodes trust. I actually think trust between humans is fairly constant in aggregate, right?
Right.
Some people don't trust anyone. Some people trust too often. But overall, there's sort of a uniform level of trust,
which is good. That's what we need.
But you, Roger, you mentioned the privacy and how people are dealing with that and getting used to, you know, thousands of people possibly seeing something. That's something that's actually changed over time, because long ago, people lived in villages, in small villages, and pretty much everyone in the village knew what you were up to, knew what your family was up to. And as we move forward into like nuclear families and people have their own homes, you have much more this notion that, you know, whatever, 80, 90% of your life is sort of in the private realm, where people don't see you doing whatever you're doing or whatever you're thinking about or whatever you're reading. And I think this is kind of swinging the other way, at least when you're out and about.
Yeah. So more shut-ins for people want to be private.
That's what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah.
Or you wrap yourself in a flexible OLED screen to hide what you're doing.
Or you get one of those.
Yeah. Nifty, everyone thinks I'm Roger Chang.
Yeah,
one of those nifty chameleon suits from Scanner Darkly.
Oh, yeah. Those were cool.
Totally.
I'm waiting for that. That's going to be awesome.
That movie was weird.
Oh, I'm Tom Merritt. Give me a big pack of cigars.
Yeah.
Wait.
2 weeks. He'll just say 2 weeks a lot.
2 weeks.
And then it'll fall apart. All right. Well, that leads us into my favorite part of the show. That is the pop quiz. And it goes a little something like this.
America scores and wins.
It's your chance, Roger and Roger, to be asked questions in areas of your expertise. Roger. And if you get these questions properly correct, then Tom will award you points. He does it in very strange ways, so don't trust what your heart tells you. Trust what your gut tells you.
What these points allow us to do?
And they will they buy you nothing. No tickets, no penny
whistles.
They're
good in the Zune store.
That's right. If you get an answer correct, you get this. If you get it wrong, you get this. And then Tom will continually assess your performance until after you both have finished and then award the final scores. We are going to start with Roger White, a.k.a. Ralph. Ralph, are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
All right. Your questions are right here. Hold on. I got to pull them up here. All right. Yours are related to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. All right?
Okie dokie.
Because you're a big fan, and we're going to see how you do here. So the Joss Whedon classic, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Here's your first question. What is the title of the very first episode of Buffy?
Welcome to the Hellmouth.
You are correct. Nicely done.
1 point.
Look at that. next up, what caused Xander and Willow to break up?
Willow and Xander to break up. Is it when Oz showed up?
You would be incorrect. It's when Xander stole her Barbie.
Okay. You're going to lose a half point for answering a question with a question.
Yeah, I told you he's a weird scorer, dude. Plus, this ain't no Jeopardy.
You lose a quarter point for answering that question with a question.
Okay.
Ooh, that was... I'm going to move on before Tom further docks you. Who played Ted Buchanan?
John Ritter.
You are correct. Nicely done.
You get an extra quarter point for knowing anything about John Ritter.
He is a great man.
He is. Just ask Chrissy or the other one. All right. Next up. What two characters first appear in the episode School Hard? The only hint I would give you is one of them is a very popular character. Probably shouldn't do that.
Oh, School Hard. It's not coming to me, so I'm just going to say Willow and Xander.
You are incorrect. Spike and Drusilla.
But you actually still get a half point for having to listen to Scott say hard. Like.
All right, fair enough. See, I told you, this makes no sense. Next up,
Slaughter.
In season 3, what color dress does Buffy wear at her prom?
Pink.
You say pink, do you? You'd be correct. It is pink. Nicely done. Third to last question. Who/what did Drusilla leave Spike for in the episode The Harsh Light of Day?
I remember what he looks like. I'm trying to think of his name. It's a big, tall demon with antlers that are bleeding.
Let's see. Tom, I'll let you choose on this one. I'm going to say it's the fungus demon.
Yes.
He said
fungus
demon.
Fungus don't have antlers, so. but we are going to give you a quarter point for the demon.
All right. Okay. Quarter point for the demon, everybody. Second to last question.
Quarter point demon rule.
Right. How many times does Dracula come back to life in the episode of Buffy versus Dracula?
Okay.
Simple number, Ralph.
How many times? Let's see.
Very simple numbers.
Not like pie or anything.
Right.
Three. I'm going to say three.
You're going to say three. You would be incorrect. The answer is two times. Two times.
Oh, yep. Darn.
Proof he's not using Google, everybody. Proof.
There you go. Right there.
Final question. What is Anya frightened of?
Bunnies.
You are correct. Nicely done. That is your quiz. Yes. What?
Extra, you get a point plus an extra quarter point because you got to say bunnies.
Oh, that's adorable, really. Yeah. All right, Roger Chang.
It's the fun bunny.
I can only imagine.
Sidle on up to the thing.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer for Ralph. What do we have for Roger,
well,
Scott?
It's something Tom suggested at Nerdtacular 2014, and I believe it was world economics, at least in the last 100 years.
Thanks, Tom.
I love
You're
this.
Do fine.
This is my favorite of the ever questions. So let's see how you do here. Question number one. Wow, hold on. I just screwed that up. There it is. Okay. In 1999, half the stocks in the S&P 500 declined. What two stocks at the time accounted for 1/5 of the index's return?
In 1999, yeah. AOL.
You are, is that one? What's the other one? If there are two?
AOL and ACFRUD. Yahoo?
You are incorrect. Microsoft and Cisco are the two companies. I led you on a little there about the first one.
You only lose a fifth of a point there.
Wait, I don't have any points.
Well, you're in the negative fifth.
Negative fifth.
Yeah. 0 points right now.
Let's see. Between 1990 and 2008, how much did China's labor force grow by? This is, of course, an estimate, but, you know.
From 1990
through 2008. Still in our 100-year limit. By? Say again?
Like the actual number of people that were employed?
Yeah.
300?
You are... incorrect. 145 million. There you go. This is hard.
Well, you're going to get a half point for being within 500 million.
That puts you in the positive. Let's see here. Between 1929 and 1932, how much in percentage did the amount of money being paid out in wages drop by?
50%.
If you get this within 10%, you get it, by the way. And that's according to the rules. And you are... correct. 60%. So right on the 10% mark.
Nice and you get a 50% bonus.
Oh, look at that. Extra half point. In 1998, the oil industry told Congress that oil would average what price per barrel?
You mean in 1998 or in the future?
In 98.
In 98?
It's past 100 years, so not 1898.
Yeah, not 1898.
So...
50 cents, I'd say. 100,
115 bucks a barrel?
You are... incorrect. $10 was the answer. $10. Yeah, I know, right?
What planet were they on?
Let's see.
$10?
I know. It's ridiculous. Next up, what index ranked the United States as 24th least corrupt country?
OECD.
That is the... give me that again. What is it?
The Organization of Economic... the Organization of Economic... something in development.
Incorrect. It is the Transparency Internationalis Corruption Perceptions Index.
But he gets a half point for having to attempt to acronym that wasn't even right.
I agree.
I don't even like that, the whole perception. Because perception is, I mean, what people...
I know.
It's a separate...
It's a racket. I know.
Points
I agree.
For arguing with the question.
East is truly meeting West today. All right. Next up, after AIG received an $85 billion bailout, the company went on a retreat to what expensive California resort?
Oh, it wasn't in...
pisses me off. Makes me so mad. Sorry. Keep going.
Oh, it was in the...
Blizzard.
Wasn't in the... wasn't Napa, was it?
It was not. It was St. Regis Resort.
Oh.
Which St. Regis Resort?
It's the Regis Philbin Memorial Resort. It's not even dead yet, and they're already memorial.
Wait, how do you have a...
Yeah, I know, right?
How do you get a memorial for a living?
Half point for an obscure correct answer.
It was pretty obscure. Second to last question. In what year was the World Trade Center organization founded?
1976.
1995 is the correct answer. Wait. What agency report? Oh, let's see. Yeah, here's your last one. What agency reported that global government spent $409 billion on fossil fuel industry subsidies in 2010? What agency would that have been? Global's your hint.
The UN.
You are incorrect. International Energy Agency, the IEA. And that,
Scott.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat the second to last question?
Yeah.
The
one in what year was the World Trade Center organization founded?
The World Trade Center organization?
I keep saying center. In which year was the World Trade Organization founded?
All right. We're awarding Roger 2 points for it incorrectly worded.
Sorry.
It's like World Trade Center. It's like,
Sounds like the 70s to me. All right. That was my goof. I will take it on the nose for that one. And so here's
so lost.
I get one of these. All right. That's against me. All right. So, Tom, add them up. How'd they do? Who won?
Ralph got a very respectable 4.5. And given that last awarding of penalty points For the misread question, Roger Chang wins with 4.8.
No way, dude. Nicely done.
Can I get a misread question?
Yeah. I want to buy that ceramic dog.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Your points.
Nicely done. I love that segment. Let's move on to this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
It's the forecast segment. Used to be a show. Now it's a segment. And we like to talk about stuff that's happening in our world and things that may happen soon. And this one came from, I don't know which Roger. Is this Roger Chang?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Came from him, but I want to claim it also because I had one about people living in the ocean, but I like this one better.
All right, this one's good. Well, you wanted DS9. What was that called? Not DS9. DSV.
Voyager?
You know, the sea one that had...
Sequest.
Sequest, DSV. Or DS...
That's Schneider.
Sequest, CSI.
2021.
Roy Scheider. And
Sequest SVU.
And it had that kid. That kid in the talking dolphin. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
The Wesley Crusher under the sea.
Yep.
Johnny Sequest.
Sequest Special Victims Unit.
John E. Sequest. All right. Nicely done. So let's do this one. This reads like this. Star Trek will come back as a regular TV series. Roger, explain. How's this going
to
go?
Basically, since Disney is planning to roll out a Star Wars movie as part of their franchise every year, as well as Marvel, I cannot see Paramount not taking the onus to kind of retool the show for a television audience in the same way, and not necessarily for broadcast, but perhaps on a premium channel like HBO or Showtime.
CBS owns the television rights, but just minor point. Yeah.
But CBS, so who's CBS the most in bed with in terms of streaming content or iTunes-y kind of things? Or is it iTunes? Is that
CBS is the one network that has stayed well. They're not on Hulu except for back catalog. Mm-hmm. They're very much like spread their catalog around to whoever will give them the right amount of money. So
is that ripe in your mind for like, hey, Netflix, you're cool. We want to do Star Trek. Can we do it with you? Or
I don't know because you're talking about CBS network stuff. When you talk about that sort of thing, the back catalog stuff is CBS, it's CBS distribution.
Sure.
But with making a Star Trek property, that's CBS production. So I don't know how much their goals are in line with each other.
Roger Chang, where do they end up? Just predict. What do you think?
I would laugh if they would try to take CNET, CBS Interactive, and make it a streaming platform.
TV.com.
TV.com.
Oh, my gosh.
I jest, but I mean, it's one of those things where, you know what? We want to launch our own streaming platform. We have a very compelling, bait here to get people to try out our service. I mean, I wouldn't. I would say,
Roger, that just sounds like Les Moonves to me. Mm. Like, no, we're not going to give our content to other people to profit off of. We'll do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but nobody's willing to take the risk it takes to say we're going to make a straight up modern Star Trek show and do it on primetime television. I don't think anyone has the nuts for that anymore.
No, I don't think so either anymore.
But I do think plenty of cable channels and plenty of streaming networks and other things absolutely do, and in some cases have the budget necessary to have the nuts to do this. So, you know, I have a lot of faith in what Netflix would do or anybody else would do. And Marvel's already got their foot over there with their little limited run series stuff like for Daredevil and others they're working on. If that stuff holds up and stands up to the likes of House of Cards and Orange is the New Black and so on, and we're probably looking at something pretty awesome. So,
and don't forget, CBS produces shows for other networks. Like they all do that. A lot of people don't realize that. So it's not unthinkable.
No.
You know what? I was just thinking, like, you know, it would actually be a great return on set building. And instead of retiring after the movie ends, like, say you know, the movie shot and it goes out, you could still reuse the sets for a tangential series. Like, hey, we need the interior of so-and-so ship.
Yeah. The Andromeda or some other ship name. And off they go. Yeah. Sure. Okay, well, that was going to be my next question. So, Roger White, do you put this in Kirk era? Do you put this in TNG era? Do you go past all that? What do you do?
I think we have to go future, right?
Yeah.
You always want to keep moving forward. So, I think we're going to go past.
So, past DS9, past TNG. DS9. Okay.
Interesting. Past Voyager.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm sorry.
Well, I was just, the whole part about how it gets out there and who does it. CBS could make their own streaming service called Cthulhu for all I care. I just want to get out there because I think the world is best when there's Star Wars movies in the theater and Star Trek on our TVs.
Yeah.
That's the world I want to be in.
That's a good balance.
I could actually totally see them redoing a spinoff from the J.J. Abrams reboot, and they'll just call it like Federation, and it'll just be like an ensemble procedural show.
I'd be down with that too. I'd be okay with it with Federation point of view. San Francisco, that's where we're at. We're sending shuttles off to do things. We're talking to Starfleet captains, telling them to do things. Like, that's a pretty interesting idea. You'd have to have really the right people doing it, and they'd have to really do a good job.
It's a political thriller called House of Cardassians.
Too close to Kardashians.
I want a police procedural with CSI Odo.
Yeah, CSI Odo. That's basically what DS9 was anyway.
Well,
I wonder what the technology they would use though. It's like, hey, we got a couple of the cells from the victim. Why don't we just reconstitute into a living being, and maybe we can ask him questions.
That's a great idea. See, I could get into that. Yeah. I know we're being kind of jesty here, but I would watch. I'm okay with them applying kind of modern tropey things into this already familiar space. I mean, I know it's dangerous. Voyager was dangerous because they're going real far and they haven't done that before, and they can't get home, and this is, lost in space, basically. And, Stargate tried that same thing and to mixed results. So I know it's dangerous and sketchy. And some would say, well, the only way to do this is you get them on a ship, you get a good crew, and they explore places they've never been. And it's back to the core of why Star Wars worked, or Star Trek worked with TOS and TNG.
I love that idea. I've thought about that for more than 10 years, that they should take a series, set it far away from the next generation, so there's very little crossover, and put us a Federation ship going to Andromeda or something, like put them way out there so that they can have all new stories and get back to that original feeling of a wagon train to the stars.
Ensemble cast helps. I don't know if I want it to be, have to be really far out in the future, but I do want it at least to be post-Borg.
Right? We're done with the Borg. Let's be past the Borg.
The Borgs be like the Romulans and the Klingons are, right? Yeah. They're now.
Well, because little Toto or whatever his name, what was the Borg that got back into the mix and had feelings? And so they all got
Hugh?
Borg? Yeah. Toto. Not even close to Toto.
Toto, you're.
You know, Toto the Borg.
You're crazy on salty.
And your little
soda.
Borg,
yeah,
too.
Borg.
I want them to run into an alien race that doesn't look like a humanoid.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I know that's what
I would love that about. Too.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's doable now too, right? It's not
well,
a
they did
problem.
It. Yeah. They did it with the sort of with the Borg enemy, from the fluidic space from the alien.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah.
Even though they took on the appearance of a human to interact with the cast.
And they kind of they sometimes have some that aren't human, but they treat them like the crystalline entity.
Mm. Right. Oh yeah, those are the
where they mostly talk about them.
The Tholians.
Yeah, the Tholians. Sure. Yeah. The Tholian. Oh my gosh, so much fun to be had. Let's see if they do it. I hope your prediction comes true. I do have an email to read though. We get calls, we get emails, and we got one here from Tom. It's not our Tom, different Tom.
Different Tom.
Speaking of acronyms, we keep talking about acronyms and then initialisms and that whole argument we've had on the show. So speaking of acronyms, the U.S. Navy had an officer job teaching Naval Nuclear Power School that used recent college grads. These grads only taught the school and didn't have to go to the fleet. The name of their job, and this is true, was Direct Input Limited Duty Officer, or DILDOs. Wouldn't have believed it myself if I wasn't there. Love the show, Tom. So I don't know why I thought I'd share that, but it made me laugh. So
is it true?
He says it's true. This I can only take this emailer at his word.
He said it's true is different than it is true.
We should look it up,
I'm looking right now.
All right. Good.
It's in the Urban Dictionary. The Direct Input Limited.
Wired.com has it listed.
Yeah.
In a story of most awesomely bad military acronyms.
Yeah, according to Wired.
There's also Defense Industrial Security Clearance Office, or DISCO.
That one I like a lot. I can't find any. I mean, I don't know where you get something official here.
I think Urban Dictionary,
we can count on that. Yeah. Don't look up GERP, by the way. GERP. It's my character in World of Warcraft.
Don't look up anything. Just
I'll go with Wired. Wired.
Wired's, they're reputable. They talk about, they have things.
Not that they could be wrong, but I think it's likely.
Yeah, not likely. If you'd like to submit your own emails, it's real simple. You can send them to currentgeek@gmail.com, and we'd love to get them, so please keep them coming. That's going to do it, everybody. That's a show. I do want to thank our guests. Man, I like the two Rogers. I think the two Rogers could be back. They're like, they're returnable on the show.
Yeah, Roger, Roger.
Agree.
Returnable.
Returnable. You guys are get full price back. Roger Chang, do tell the world where they can find you. I guess not at Revision 3, but something else cool and Twitter and things. Where should they go?
Yeah, just go to at Jolly Roger on Twitter, and you can just ping me or whatever and follow my infrequent tweets.
Yeah, and East Meets West with Tom Merritt on a semi-frequent basis. I like that show a lot.
Subbrilliant.com/EMW. We try to get once a month.
Yeah, I like it. I've always liked that show.
And I think what I'll do is I'll just cut out everything Roger and I said in this episode and we'll just call that a
Yeah. And no one remembers this, but I was on an episode of East Meets West with Roger when Tom was on vacation.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? And you did it from like the Twit offices or something. And,
back from the Leo Command Center.
Yeah, that's right. And we did that one time and it was way fun.
The LCC.
It's a really good show. People should check it out. It's also on the mega feed over there at frogpants.com if that's how you get your extra shows. So either way, we got you covered. Roger White, Ralph, what's going on? Where are you at? What are you doing? Where can we point people to for you?
Doctor Who.
Well, I am on Twitter at Ralphie, R-A-L-F-F-I-E. But as Tom was singing along there, back in February, we started a podcast called Catching Up with Doctor Who, myself and Kim Price and Johnny Feisty.
Yay.
You can find us on the internet at catchingup.tv. And we have a Twitter called at Catching Up With. And basically what we did was we started watching Doctor Who from the 2005 season with Chris Eccleston. Mm-hmm. We watch a couple episodes every week, and then we have a show about it. Mm. And I am new to all of this, but Kim and Johnny have seen it before, so they're my leaders through all this. And Tom actually came on our show 1 week when
when Kim was out. My only complaint about being on your show is that Kim was out.
Oh, yes.
But other than that, I had a great time.
Yeah. I think she was purposely out because those were not two of the most stellar episodes.
Well,
but we're having a ton of fun with it, and everybody out there who always wanted to watch it but hasn't, This is my trick to do that.
Well, when I go to finally do it myself, because I am also not much of a Who guy. I haven't seen very many episodes. I was more into it when I was a kid, honestly. But I keep telling Tom this, too. We did this on autopilot, and I thought, well, now's my chance. And I still haven't done it. So maybe I'll use your show as an impetus. Go back, listen to that first episode, watch the show, and follow that way. Good idea.
And when you get caught up, you can come join us.
All right. I'm in. That's all that's holding me back. Tom Merritt, anything going on in your world we should mention before we go?
I had a great time guesting with Ashley Esqueda on Tomorrow Daily at CNET.com, tomorrowdaily.com. We talked about those LG scroll-up screens, as I mentioned. And, of course, DailyTechNewsShow.com if you want a scoop. Not a scoop as in telling you things beforehand, but like a slice of daily tech news every day. I have great guests. And a good time.
Yeah, that's a great show. People should be checking that out. As far as me and other things going on, most, if not all, of the Frog Pants stuff that happened at Nerdtacular, all the shows, all the panels, they're up in some audio form somewhere on everyone's feeds. There's a bunch of stuff on the mega feed as well, including the All-Stars competition. Video is coming soon. We'll have news on that soon because a lot of people want that. But it was a fantastic time. And if you want to catch a bunch of that, there are live episodes of TMS, FilmSack, sure. So many good things. It was so great. Loved seeing everybody there, including you three, and news on when that all gets to happen again sometime. So watch for that in the future. Frogpants.com is the place to get it. I want to thank Andrew Allen for our theme music, at Current Geek on Twitter. For the show, at Scott Johnson, at Ace Detect. CurrentGeek.reddit.com is our Reddit. Don't forget CurrentGeek at gmail.com and CurrentGeek.com for all our show episodes. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Welcome to another iteration of The Geekly Scholar. I'm Rich Stroffolino, and each week I'll be highlighting an article with a geeky focus written with scholastic rigor. This week, I found an amazing essay in the April issue of The Appendix entitled The History of Mana. The author, Alex Golub, sets out to examine how a highly localized religious concept from what Europeans dub Melanesia turned into a ubiquitous game mechanic in the 21st century. Golub starts out the essay by grounding it in his love of World of Warcraft, describing how his fascination with mana started with his character Izzy Cohen, a Draenei shaman with a penchant for jewelry. Mana, or its conceptual antecedents, was active in Austronesian cultures for thousands of years. Golub points to the late 19th century for its introduction to the West, with Robert Henry Codrington's publication of The Melanesians, Studies in Their Anthropology and Folklore in 1891. Codrington worked with a longtime Anglican mission all over the Southwest Pacific for decades and had access to study the religions of numerous Austronesian cultures. To quote a synopsis of Mana,
"It is a power or influence, not physical, and in a way, supernatural. But it shows itself in physical force, or in any kind of power or excellence which a man possesses."
For more info on how Mana evolved as a force in fantasy, you have to read the essay. Golub does an amazing job connecting the disparate threads throughout the 20th century. Golub finishes the piece with an excellent coda. On its surface, one could accuse Blizzard and the West in general in being colonizers of Mana. But Golub counters, did they borrow it? Yes. Did they exoticize it? Perhaps. But by playing with it, they honored it. The world is full of stories like the story of Mana, stories whose paths across cultures and through time are rarely fully recorded. But these stories matter to us, because their histories are part of our lives. Like Mana, they lay in the background until, click, someone shines a light on them, and we see the power they truly possess. This has been The Geekly Scholar. For a link to this article, find me on Twitter at Mr. Anthropology.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review the impact of this week's Supreme Court decision that killed one cord-cutting option called Aereo. The Supreme Court always releases a high number of decisions in June at the end of their annual term. One of the most notable decisions this year came down in June as the Aereo service was confirmed to be copyright infringement by the Supreme Court. For those unfamiliar with Aereo, this was a subscription service that allowed users to watch over-the-air television broadcasts by intercepting the signals with miniature antenna. Basically, a user decided what program he wanted to watch, and Aereo opened access to the channel by sending the intercepted antenna signals to the user's device. The 6-judge majority opinion held that the transmission of these intercepted programs to user devices was enough to qualify as a public performance of these programs, which is one of the rights that copyright protection includes. This was deemed by the court to be analogous to a performance of the program through an individual conduit to many users, which would clearly be improper under copyright precedent. On this point, I think that common sense won the day. Thus, Aereo will be shut down. The court explicitly stated that this case does not decide whether copyright infringement occurs with cloud computing or remote storage DVRs, so this really just shuts down the most illegitimate of the cord-cutting services. This decision has no effect on more popular services like Netflix and Amazon Prime, which pay royalties to stream the programs they deliver to subscribers. The bottom line is, cord-cutting and cloud computing live on, while Aereo will not, at least in its current form. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy. If you want to hear more about this or other similar cases, please check out my upcoming seminars at Gen Con in August.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.